The views and opinions expressed by the guests on the following program do not necessarily represent those of Mark Radio, The Shepherd, or its advertisers.
From the studios of the Shepherd Radio Network, it's Afternoons with Mike. This next hour is all about our walk with Jesus, with local pastors, newsmakers, people who are making a difference for the gospel. Now, here is your host, Mike Gilland.
Hey friends, and welcome once again to Afternoons with Mike right here on The Shepherd. Each and every day, it's my opportunity to have either a guest in the studio or a guest over the line. Today, the former is the case. In the studio with us is a young man that I had the privilege of working with, doing a production of all things, a high school production called it was Aladdin, and it was over at Altamont Christian School. And I had a chance to sit beside as I was doing the music cues. My guest today was running the sound, and his name is Christian Pizarro. Christian, welcome to my program, man.
Yeah, so grateful for the opportunity.
You know, it's really awesome to have a young person of your age here. Now, exactly how old are you, my man?
I recently turned 24.
Okay, that's wonderful. I remember that, but it was a long time ago. It was a really long time ago. That's how old I was when my daughter was born.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, okay. So my first daughter was born. And the one you know, actually, the one that works there at Altamont Christian School. And Christian, I just was impressed with this young man's heart, his attitude. There's a lot of, I think, a lot of talk at times about from older people, mm-hmm. about younger people. It's not always in the most positive of lights where we look and we think those coming up after us are, you know, there's an insinuation oft times by older people that that the kids only have their face in the screen. And yeah. Sadly, that's more true than it should be. Let's put it that way, if I could say it that way.
For sure.
But it's really wonderful to find a young person like yourself that does have a heart for God, wants their lives to make a difference, want to see your life be effective mm-hmm. and effectual for the kingdom. So, man, that's why I just was drawn to you, and I thought, I got to have this guy on my radio show. Because
I really appreciate it, and I appreciate you helping me out whenever we had some audio issues when we were working in the play, and I really appreciate you helping me out with that and giving me some different pointers and different tips how to make things better, and, I really do appreciate that.
Well, it was fun, and I think it's been there all my life, a desire and a love for working with people and seeing, especially those that maybe are coming up in an area mm-hmm. That I've done before, and just to help in any way I can. I that's been my heart, and it is still my heart. And even though I'm now an old guy, I hope I never lose that. And it's wonderful that you and I had that privilege to work together. And I think transgenerationally, when you think about this is such a good thing mm-hmm. to have the opportunities, I think, for older people to be near and working alongside younger people. And that's one of the things that, again, I wanted to cover today with you. First of all, let's talk about your own life. How did you come to know the Lord?
Yeah. It's a very interesting story when I can really see God kind of working in my life even before I was born. My mom, my parents, they grew up in church, and my mom was very faithful in that. And when she was pregnant with me, she actually got diagnosed with a toxoplasmosis, which was basically like a parasite that you can get either through different ways. And so it happened in the first trimester. And so there was a 90% chance that, you know, when she had her baby, that it was going to be born in a vegetative state.
Oh, my goodness.
And so, you know, but she believed in the power of prayer, and she had a ton of people praying for me. Even the doctors, they recommended her to have an abortion just because, you know, the baby's going to be born in a vegetative state. It would be difficult to raise, but, you know, she believed in the power of prayer. And so she had people praying here in Orlando and here in even in Puerto Rico as well. It's where my parents grew up. They grew up in Puerto Rico, and then they mm-hmm. moved to Orlando around 1990 when they got married. And so, but they believed in the power of prayer, and so many people were praying for her. And, you know, it's really like a miracle that I'm here today, even from birth. And
Well, I'm glad you are. and you know, that would be a real sad statistic to find out how many aborted babies. I mean, there's no good ever a good situation for that. Mm-hmm. But if they ever knew how many times women who didn't really want to do that, but did it because of that very kind of concern, which would be in the end an unfounded concern, something that would not have been necessary, mm-hmm. because what they feared was not there, which is exactly what happened in your life. You turned out to be perfectly fine and able and certainly not vegetative, I might add.
Yeah, I praise God for that for sure. And, you know, I've even from then on kind of seeing God work through my life and through my family's life in different ways. We grew up in church. We've, you know, even from pretty much like a week after I was born, I've been in church ever since, in different capacities as well. I started really serving in church, I would say around 10 years old, helping with kids ministry with music or with when they had vacation Bible schools and different capacities here and there. And that's when around that time is when I started to kind of have that passion for music and for worship. In the church that I grew up in, I really started listening to more gospel music. Like I would say, like, the first artists that I remember listening to was like Israel Anubrey, like Martha Munizzi, mm-hmm. all those gospel artists and stuff. And that really kind of, you know, kind of grew my passion for worship and for music. And from there, I just started to kind of develop and grow. And I didn't actually learn an instrument until I was around 12 years old.
Hmm. Now, let's talk about, first of all, because you know the Munizzis are here in Orlando. You know that. I really had a hard time with that name right there. But that's really awesome that you listened to them in Israel, like you said, with New Breed. Wow. There's so many songs. One of my wife's favorite songs was by Israel back then. And it was a great cranking song of the church. So where in here, I know that you just didn't, you know, you had to come to that point of making the Lord more than just something that you heard about or something that you watched your parents serve. Where did that happen in your life?
Yeah, interestingly enough, it happened later on in my life. So, you know, growing up, I served in church in different capacities with either music or even from the production side, even mm-hmm. something as simple as running slides and everything. But I would say in high school was when I kind of realized that, you know, this was more of a relationship rather than just doing works to be saved. Mm-hmm. And, you know, at least in my upbringing, I felt like it was more of, you know, you need to do these works in order to be saved. And if you didn't do these works, you know, you were condemned. Hmm. At least that's what I felt in my opinion.
What was it like for you when you made the prayer and asked the Lord to come in? What do you remember about that?
Yeah. Being honest, I can't remember of a specific day or a specific time when that happened. I just, you know, I realized, you know, that Jesus was my Lord. And, you know, I realized that I want to have a relationship with him and I want to serve him. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I wanted him to be the Lord and I wanted him to be my, you know, kind of my compass and, mm-hmm. and my direction.
Now, I know you're serving in a Baptist church right now. Is that always what your family was?
Actually, no. I actually grew up in Assemblies of God church for pretty much until I was like 13, 14. And we've kind of been jumping into different churches, kind of, you know, waiting for God to kind of lead us into which, you know, which season we want to go in. I grew up in mainly Spanish churches.
Mm-hmm.
So I was in like a Spanish Assemblies of God. Then we were in a more of an independent kind of smaller church. And then we went into a Church of the Nazarene. But they weren't following so much like all the legal side of the Church of the Nazarene. It was more just like the name and like the pastor wasn't following all the specifics of it.
Mm-hmm. All the denominational, theological and all of that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so then from there, I would say after I graduated high school was the first time I went to an English church, and that was a Baptist church.
So did your parents speak English as well?
Yeah. Yeah. So they mainly speak Spanish, and they both know English. They've been living here for actually, they've been living here more than they had lived in Puerto Rico at the time.
The assemblies have always been big in a lot of other countries besides America. Did they attend an assemblies church when they were in Puerto Rico?
No, they actually attended a Baptist church.
Interesting.
In Puerto Rico. Yeah.
Now, that does seem to be an interesting kind of like path that they took then to come to the United States and ended up in an Assemblies of God church.
Yeah. Yeah. The church is about maybe 10 minutes away from their house. And so that just kind of where God led them and started building relationships there. And then we knew a lot of people there growing up, and we just kind of felt that God had kind of called us into a newer season out of where we were. And, you know, it was hard for, at least for my parents, because my dad had known the pastor for over 20 something years.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they were even good friends. But God just kind of called us out into a new direction.
So if I'm hearing you correctly, there really hasn't been a falling away time that was significant in your lifetime then, right? Or is that right?
Yeah, no, that's an interesting question. I would say around sophomore year of high school, I started to kind of have those thoughts of, is God real kind of thing. You know, I had been serving for a long time. I had been doing music for several years. Then I started learning the bass when I was around 12. And then from there, I started to learn different instruments through some different instructors, and then I kind of taught myself different ones. And so I'd been kind of really serving in church pretty much for several years. I'm never wanting to miss a Sunday, never wanting to, you know, miss that opportunity. And then I got to a point where I was like, you know, is God even real?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm wondering, like, you know, do I have to continue to do these works in order to, you know, be saved, or even, you know, have, you know, is my worth based off of my works?
I think a lot of people right now are identifying with what you're saying. I think most everybody has those doubts, would at some point, even if they are raised in a church, grown up in a church, and yet there has to be that moment where it becomes real, more than just words, very real, very personal.
Yeah.
What at that point, Christian, do you remember bringing you back into that place of knowing that, yeah, this is real?
Yeah, it's very interesting. I would say God kind of rocked me in a sense. So, you know, there was one night where at a church that I was playing at, there was a guest speaker there, and he was talking about some different things. And then I was more focused on, you know, the music side of it all. But then I went up to the, I just felt God kind of call me up to the front to pray, come to the altar. And so I was praying, and then like God kind of revealed some things to me.
Hmm.
And even like the speaker was saying some things that, you know, that I didn't even realize, that, you know, there was a time where I was, you know, doing more of the wrong thing, but still kind of playing, you know, I was kind of, you know, going in a different direction. You know, my eyes were focused on something that wasn't, you know, that wasn't of God. And, you know, the pastor was kind of just like, hey, you need to get your act together. And like, I was just like, whoa, you don't even know me. And you know,
read your mail.
Yeah.
Yeah.
God kind of revealed to him some of the things that I was, you know, that I was doing in my life. And, you know, I think at that point I realized, okay, God, this is real. You are real. And this is serious.
Mm-hmm. Well, I tell you what, those kinds of things are life changing, really. And life critical.
Yeah.
Because what would it be like if it, what would our lives be like? What could we do? And I don't think we have to go very far to think about what it would be like if God had not intervened and had not really brought somebody that in a real way woke you up.
Yeah.
And said, hey, I need to get my act together. Like he said, I need to do what is right. And the reason I need to do what is right is because that's what God is calling me to do.
Yeah. Yeah. And my dad, even growing up, was kind of telling me, you know, like, this is a serious thing, you know, music and worship, it's a serious calling. And, you know, God can, he can take that from you in an instant. And so I felt like that was kind of a reminder. And really, at that point, I really felt his grace there, because, you know, he could have just taken that ministry from me. He could have done it anything could have happened at that moment, but God gave me, I felt like he gave me a second chance to kind of say, hey, you know, I want to use you, but you need to get your act together.
That would be an area in which your life and my life had a similar path, because I was serving all the time. Mm-hmm. And yeah, there are those aspects of when I look back in my life and I think about the fact that I stood so many times on a Sunday morning or a Sunday night service playing an instrument mm-hmm. in the church service where my heart wasn't just where it needed to be. And it wasn't focused, like you said, on God. And it wasn't, I was in a real way playing around more than just playing music. Mm-hmm. I was playing around in my heart and mm-hmm. in my life. Mm-hmm. And God has a way of cutting through all of that. I'm grateful that he did that in my life. Grateful that he did that in your life as well.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm very grateful for that. And it's an incredible blessing. And, you know, there were some consequences that came because of all that, but I think, you know, in the end, you know, it all worked for good, and it was all for a reason, and God had a plan for it all.
For either a young person that might be listening right now or a parent that might be listening that has a young person like you, what advice would you have about that very issue, about playing around when someone is not at heart yet doing what they need to be doing? What advice would you have?
Yeah, I would say, you know, at least for the parent side, you know, always check up on your kids, making mm-hmm. sure that, you know, that everything is okay. And, you know, even if they say everything's all right, you know, maybe just kind of dig a little deeper in that mm-hmm. and, you know, making sure that, you know, that everything really is okay.
Yeah.
And I would say from the kid's side or from the teenager side or whatever age, you know, I would say, you know, it's okay to be honest with God about it. It's okay to be honest with some concerns that you have, maybe, you know, there's any sin in your life that you realize, you know, hey, this isn't what I should be doing, you know, come to God with that, because I didn't come to God with that. I tried to hide it from him mm-hmm. and, you know, he mm-hmm. sees it all, you know, he knows everything.
Yeah, he does. And I think the issue of keeping a conscience clean, that's something a parent can mm-hmm. help instruct their children to do that follow-up. When you were talking about asking them and kind of following up with them, I thought of that old accountability list that used to be out years ago, hundreds of years ago, mm-hmm. where men would ask follow-up questions about each other's life and accountability. And then one of the last questions was, have you just lied to me? So actually asking a little deeper than what most people go. And I think asking that second or third question, are you really okay?
Yeah.
Please, you know, developing that. And that doesn't mean introspection or legalism, although a lot of times, sadly, accountability can be either thought of that way mm-hmm. or perceived as that way. And sometimes I think those that are trying to do the right thing by asking, they go maybe farther than they should. But the point does remain, sometimes people, young people and older people alike, will give off the first answer like, oh yeah, everything's great. No problems at all here.
Yeah.
Nothing to see here, folks. Go home. You know, and actually there's a lot there to see. There'd be a lot that needs to change. So I think that's a good thing, and thank God that you had that in your life.
Yeah, I'm very grateful for my parents and for all that they did to kind of help guide me in the direction. You know, we would spend some time together, you know, praying together, getting on our knees, you know, reading the Word. We would spend time doing that as we were growing up, and you know, that really kind of helped me develop that in my own life, in my own personal prayer time, my own personal walk with Jesus.
Are your folks still here?
Yeah. No, I still live with them, actually.
Oh, you do?
Yeah.
Well, that's awesome.
Yeah, so they're still here, and they actually come with me now to the church that I'm at right now, which is Palm Springs Drive Baptist Church.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah, I'm grateful that they came with me along with my fiance and her family as well. We all just kind of came together, and it was an incredible story and incredible blessing.
Now, I'm sure you've had people, friends or whatever, that would question you, 24-year-old man, they'd say, what are you still doing living with your parents? I think that's awesome, and I think it's smart.
Yeah.
But what has that happened to you?
Not necessarily, but I'm grateful that they're, you know, that they still open their home to me.
I hate to be the first person then that ever asked that.
No, I mean that's a reasonable thought. You know, hey, you're a 24-year-old, you're about to be done with your master's. Like, why are you still living with your folks? I'm like, well, that's the reason why, because I'm still finishing up my master's.
Like, I think it's wonderful.
Yeah.
My kids did that with us, and we loved it.
Yeah.
And you know, they got through college and stayed at home, and boy, oh boy, that's wonderful. And then as time went on, they did finally make that move. But I'm grateful for all those extra years. And I know from talking talking to you today, I am betting your mom and dad are glad that you're still there.
Yeah, they're grateful for that, and I'm grateful for them as well, for sure.
Christian Pizarro, you can tell already what a fine young man that I'm talking to today and why I wanted him to share his story with you. Thank you for listening. We're going to be back with Christian. We're going to talk worship and how Christian kind of has gotten himself not only into the worship scene, but actually as a worship leader and part of a church staff leading worship as well. And that's pretty exciting. Christian Pizarro, my guest today on Afternoons with Mike. Don't go away. We'll be right back. We are back again with Christian Pizarro. Christian is on the staff at your church. You were obviously leading sound some at Altamont Christian School too, so you help them out. And your real main goal, your real main heart is that as a worship leader. And
yeah.
You mentioned a little bit in segment one about kind of like being involved in music and learning bass, I believe you said first. So what kind of path did you follow to learn music?
Yeah. So when I was in middle school or so, I learned, I was in band and I learned the trumpet.
All right.
And then from there in the church side, I learned bass first, but I kind of developed both of those over time. And then I started to learn guitar through an instructor and for a couple lessons or so. The same one who taught me bass, taught me guitar for a little bit. And then I kind of taught myself more of the detailed side of guitar, and then I started to teach myself piano and drums, just to kind of keep myself versatile and make sure, you know, if anybody needs me in a certain instrument, I can be able to fill in, and we don't have to worry about, you know, trying to bring somebody in. You know, I can be like, okay, I don't mind playing this for, you know, for a Sunday or so, and just kind of doing that. And along with developing the trumpet in band, you know, when I was in high school. So I just wanted to be versatile in learning different instruments and making myself useful.
Well, that's wonderful. You know, back in the day, in the 70s, I believe this is how long, when I think about it, most of my sayings would probably date back to the 70s.
Yeah.
But there was a song and a phrase that which is what you were, a super sideman. You were able to play the drums if needed, or the bass guitar if needed, or the guitar if needed. And that really is a helpful thing for a worship leader, and to have a young person that is able and expansive on their instruments that say, hey, I can do that.
Yeah, yeah.
I can play that.
It was a little nerve-wracking at first. Like, there was a point where about a year or so at a church that I was going to, and even eventually getting hired on to, that I had to play keys for about a year or so.
Oh, you play keys too?
Yeah.
Now, you're starting to sound like the guy that it's just not fair.
I try not to talk about it as much, just because, you know, I don't want to put myself out there as,
wow,
like, you know, like.
Well, it's really an amazing gift to be able to do all of that. And so you mentioned a couple of the people that really were influencers in you. You mentioned Martha Munizzi. Mm-hmm. You mentioned Israel Houghton. I think it's how he says that.
Yeah, Israel Houghton.
Houghton, maybe it is. Yeah.
Yeah.
Of New Breed. These songs, what would be your earliest memories of how they impacted your life?
Yeah, I would say a couple different things. The music side of it all, just kind of hearing all the different, you know, especially like the drums, you know, gospel drummers, they like to go a little bit more all out, which I like hearing that, all the different notes and effects and everything, and even the words as well. Like, I can remember just thinking about it now, when I was younger, we would listen to like songs like Alpha and Omega, mm-hmm, from Israel, and just like being in the presence there, you know, To Worship You I Lived, songs like that. You know, it's just like, God, I give myself to you. I want to live my life to worship you, to be a sacrifice for you, and songs like that. I remember in elementary school, I was part of one of our class. We did a chapel, and we did Because of Who You Are, mm-hmm. something simple like that. You know,
that's
because of
one
who
of
you
my
are,
way.
You know,
that's
I give
song.
You glory. Yeah,
yeah,
such a great song.
Oh my goodness. And that was the song that I was referring to earlier that
okay.
my wife loves so much, because if there was ever a song that had the joy of the Lord sown through and through, I mean, it's embedded in that song. You can't sing that song and be unhappy. I don't think.
Yeah.
I don't think you could.
No. It's such a powerful song. You know, I lift my voice to say, you know, Lord, I worship you because of who you are. You know, there's no other reason but because of who you are. I give you glory. I give you honor. I worship you.
So basically, that's kind of sung, and this is one of the points I wanted to talk with you about today. Mm-hmm. That song has threads throughout of gospel music that would be a little bit different than what some of today's contemporary Christian worship music would be.
Yeah.
Stylistically wise, musically wise, arrangement wise.
Mm-hmm.
So what was it about? Would it have been the brass part, since you were a trumpet player? Was it the brass part in that sound that pulls you over, or as opposed to, let's say, some of the Bethel music that's out today?
Yeah. I would say when I was younger, it was more like the brass, the keyboard side of it all, the drums. But then, like, over time, as I started to hear different music, you know, that started to kind of develop my, I guess you could say, kind of repertoire of genres and music that I listen to. I listen to now all kinds of Christian music, from contemporary to gospel to even just simple, like, acoustic bass songs.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, I would say, you know, they all had different impacts in my life. There was a point where, you know, I would listen to just kind of Hillsong for a very long time, songs like, you know, Cornerstone, or even some earlier ones like Shout to the Lord,
mm-hmm.
ones like that. I would listen to more rock at some point, like from Planet Shakers, songs like Nothing is Impossible, You Are Good, and yeah, it would just kind of over time kind of develop into different genres and things that I listen to. But I would say, you know, I would always go back to like Israel or Martha or those kinds of gospel songs. They always are ingrained in me, in a sense, just because mm-hmm. of growing up listening to it all the time. And so, you know, I would always go back to them and listen to those songs because they still have an impact to me today. You know, sometimes I'm driving into church on a Sunday and I'm like, you know, I want to listen to some more worship music. I put on like To Worship You I Live, songs that I sung when I was younger. I'm like, you know, they still have an impact today.
And what do you think, what would be your thoughts, and maybe not only yours, but you find that other people your age would say about hymns and the role that hymns play?
Yeah, being honest, I mean, I probably wouldn't have listened to a hymn until like I was in high school, just because, you know, I grew up in Spanish churches and we didn't sing as many hymns. We had like our own different songs and different genres. But like when I was in high school, the school that I was at, we were, you know, they were singing more hymns. And so I would say, you know, that's when I started to listen to songs like Jesus Paid It All, Great Is Thy Faithfulness, How Great Thou Art. Like, yeah, I wouldn't have known those songs until I was in high school. And, you know, they still have an impact on, you know, even in today's society. You know, when I was leading worship in chapels and stuff, you know, we would sing those hymns, and, you know, they would still have an impact. You know, I'd hear students, you know, singing their hearts out to songs like, you know, like singing a bridge, like, oh, praise the one who paid my debt
mm-hmm.
and raised his life up from the dead. You know, it's such a powerful, powerful words, powerful lyrics. You know, I would say listening to hymns, you know, I focus more on the lyric side of it, you know, making sure, you know, do these hymns, you know, do they still have an impact today? And, you know, the words and the meanings behind it all, you know, I want it to be fruitful and, you know, still impactful
mm-hmm.
For whoever's, like, whenever I'm leading.
So many of the great hymns of the church are so deep in their lyric,
mm-hmm.
so deep in their theology, that they're actually almost like teaching sermons set to music. And that's the thing that I find that people like yourself that wouldn't have known, I wondered about that, if you'd experienced that and find out that you really hadn't had that as part of your necessarily your upbringing in church, but now that you've discovered it, you've found that there's a lot there.
Yeah. Yeah. No. And, you know, I try to, at least whenever I'm leading worship, at least integrate a hymn or two, just because, you know, they're a lot of them have some sound theology. And, you know, over time I realized, you know, some songs that, you know, that we sing that are more contemporary today, they have some lyrics are based off of some hymns in mm-hmm. That were written back in, that were written long ago, you know, at least for me, it felt like long ago. I don't know. But at least thinking about a song right now, thinking of like Cornerstone, you know, my hope is built on nothing less. It just goes back to on Christ, the solid rock I stand.
Oh, yeah.
You know, my hope is built on nothing less than Jesus' blood and righteousness. You know, those songs, they still make an impact, even though it's in a more contemporary sense.
Yeah. And a lot of them have pulled segments of the original hymns into their song, into the arrangements. And you can do that with public domain type of songs mm-hmm. that it's not, they're no longer bound by the same type of copyright laws and all. But that adds the just kind of like the truthfulness, the veracity of weightiness of great lyrics and the ability to, I guess, convey the thought that you're wanting to take in your writing and to pull in something that is just age old, a couple of hundred years old in some instances, and a great hymn of the church. And it just makes, in that new setting, with maybe with a new arrangement, it still is gold.
Yeah, for sure.
Wonderful.
It's incredible to kind of see, you know, over time, how, you know, how the church has still been able to use songs like that mm-hmm. and still impact people today.
Well, let's take a pivot now, and I'm going to go from something that we find on common ground, and you as a young person appreciate that. I think that it's going to please a lot of our older listeners that also love the hymns, and mm-hmm. I'm so grateful that you have that care. What do you see in today's world and today's music that might be sometimes a bit of a concern? Is there anything at all that you would say, I'm not really as comfortable with this or that? Is that anything like that a part of you?
Yeah, I would say sometimes some of the songs that come out, I feel like a lot of them have to do more with I rather than him.
Man-centered versus God-centered.
Yeah, I would say that at least in one of the churches that I was at, the pastor would always encourage me, you know, to choose songs that were more about Christ
mm-hmm.
and less of the word I in the lyrics.
Hmm. Good advice. I think that's great. And that's kind of getting to where there's a lot of criticism mm-hmm. and I think it's rightly done, where you have a song that has a memorable music arrangement. I mean, it's just like, holy cow, I love the sound of that. But that's just really all there is to love about it.
Yeah.
Is the sound and it's the music. And then sometimes, in some instances, there have actually been songs that are maybe even pointing away toward a thought theologically that would not be healthy, that would not be a good thought at all. And it's not, it kind of there's this mismatch of great song, mm-hmm. great arrangement, not so great theology. So I think that is kind of incumbent upon worship leaders, I think, to really do exactly what your mentor was telling you. Choose songs that are good theologically
mm-hmm.
and avoid only liking a song because it sounds great.
Yeah. Yeah. And I've had different people kind of challenge me on that as well. Like when I was helping lead some students in worship for a couple of years, like the youth pastor would kind of, we would work to pick songs for the week. And so, you know, I would say, oh, yeah, let's do this, just because it's modern and, you know, all the tracks in it are, you know, they all have that synth and everything. Mm-hmm. And he would be like, well, what do the words say?
Mm-hmm.
And so I'd show him the words and he's like, you know, does it relate more to what we're talking about, or is it more about the music? And so, you know, that kind of challenged me and kind of helped me, you know, shift my focus more towards, you know, do the words not only relate to the message, but also relate to theology as well?
I became a worship leader 42 years ago.
Mm.
Now that's old. And no, I did not know Moses. Okay. I just want to get that out there. But I tell you what, I think that one of the things that all worship leaders, regardless whether you've been doing it for 42 years or 42 months, we need to take this thought very seriously, that it matters what kind of songs we choose.
Mm-hmm.
It matters. We need to be choosing songs that are helpful, that are God glorifying. And I like the way you said it, not about the word I or me or my or man-centered. And we need to be choosing songs that really help teach the message of the gospel, that show the wonderful person of Christ, that shows the fullness of the gospel and God. And that's something that I think all song leaders need, all worship leaders, all musicians, not just even worship leaders, but I would love it for every worship team member to have an appreciation for not just the sound, not just the song. You know, a friend of mine is Bob Coughlin, who wrote the book Worship Matters, and he said something one time. I've never forgotten it. He said, if God has a favorite sound, what would it be? If God had a favorite song, what would it be? If God had a favorite style, what would it be? Well, God made all of these things. So he pointed a single note on the keyboard and he said, God can use a single note, and he played it. And in that moment, you could just even feel the single note on a piano of it having almost a call. I think of a song like It Is Well, where the chorus begins with that single note. It is well. Dun, dun, dun. And it really spells something about that song. And so it doesn't have to be a complex arrangement. But we need to be mindful. And one of the things, Christian, that I found helpful with teaching a brand new song to a worship band is before they hear the music, if they've never heard the song at all, and I'm introducing it to them, is not to play the track, is to read the words. To say, okay, close your eyes. I'm going to read the lyrics. Here's verse one. And I would read it. And so I think there can be something powerful about a person's first encounter with a song being the lyric and not just the whole packaged production.
That's a good thought. And, you know, I hadn't really thought about that, you know, just kind of sitting and just listening to the words. I know at least, you know, I try to at least include some form of a scripture, you know, either before we sing one of the songs that we sing on a Sunday, just to kind of give some context behind it and give some meaning behind it, you know, showing at least what the scripture says and how that relates to what we're singing.
Well, this is good. This is a good discussion, and I love that. I think we need to have the understanding that the Word of God needs to be mixed thoroughly with everything that we do in music. And, you know, I grew up in a time that it was a lot different. It probably would have been a lot more, certainly a lot of our listeners would understand what I'm saying, that we did not understand music as being the, or worship as being the encounter time. Now, I believe that all of Sunday morning is worship, not just the singing. I do believe that, but I know that we tend to relegate that time of singing to being what's called worship, and we have worship music, and there's the worship leader, and all of that. We have these terms that kind of support all of that, but I tell you what, we grew up with a song leader and not an understanding of worship leader, and as a result, in my church, I did not understand the encounter part of what people can have as a part of a better, a deeper, a more thorough appreciation for what worship is and needs to be in our churches, like what I think we have today.
We have to be, you know, we don't have to, like you said, you know, we don't need to relegate it all to just that specific time. You know, that whole service can just be, you know, it really could be considered worship. You know, we, at least when we're on Facebook, you know, we title our service a Sunday worship service, you know, because it all really is a time where we get to worship, to lift up the name of Jesus, whether in person or whether you're watching online as well. You know, it's a time where we get to set things aside and just focus on Jesus and focus on him at that moment.
You're listening to Christian Pizarro. He's my guest today on Afternoons with Mike. And I really am fascinated to hear a young man talk with depth, and it's something that I know is encouraging to you too. We've got one more segment coming with Christian coming up in a moment. We're going to take a quick break and be right back. This is Afternoons with Mike right here on The Shepherd. Back one more time with Christian Pizarro, and I just have so enjoyed today, and it's always encouraging to me to have a conversation with a young man, and it makes me know that God is at work. He is in his plan is alive and well. The church is going to go forward. The church is going to go strongly forward in hands in the hands of people like yourself that have a heart for God, that you've had the real deal. I'm so grateful that you've had parents, that, and that was so refreshing as well to hear that your story is not like that of many kids' stories today, where parents weren't involved and maybe just even distant on the issue of, is there a God? And your parents raised you up in a church, and you know, your whole memory growing up is being in the church. I think that's a marvelous thing. And here you are at age 24 serving the Lord in a church, and probably in one of the most unusual years of my entire lifetime.
Yeah.
The COVID year, the 2020. Wow. It's not going to be people's favorite year when they look back at it, but it's been a substantial year for you. So tell us, how did you get from where you were in 2019 to where you are in 2020?
Yeah. So around maybe the beginning of the year, you know, I was leading worship at a church, and I was brought on. I was an assistant. I was a ministry assistant, so I was helping with worship and the production side. Been doing that for about, I would say, around 4 years at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And then COVID happened, and
COVID happened.
Yeah, that's a good way to describe. COVID happened, and
yes, indeed, it did.
Know, we shifted to everything going online, and you know, we were doing that for a couple months, and we were thriving, and then God just kind of opened a door for me, which I wasn't looking for. I would say that would be the best way to describe it. I wasn't looking for, you know, wanting to shift or move into a new season, especially with COVID. You know, I'm like, what would that look like? But I would say within a span of 3 weeks, God kind of showed me that this was a time to move into a different season. And then God opened a door. And with, you know, where I'm at now, Palm Springs Drive Baptist Church down in Altamont, you know, they had a worship leader that was leaving.
Mm-hmm.
He was called to serve in a global missions organization.
And I knew him. He is a fine guy.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I got to know him a couple of weeks, before he left. And, you know, I've known him through different avenues as well. You know, he was a great guy. And, you know, he left, and then I came on board like a week after he moved. And so during COVID, and so, you know, I was a little uncertain about it. And, you know, I was a little kind of like, oh, how would that work? But you know, after spending some time in prayer and talking with my fiance and her family, talking with my family as well, you know, we felt like this was a good time for us. And, you know, I felt at peace about it.
Mm-hmm.
I would say that'd be the best way to describe it. I felt at peace, and my family felt at peace about it. And so then God kind of shifted us and moved us over to the Altamont area.
Wow. Now, you mentioned you're still in school, finishing your master's degree. What was your undergrad?
Yeah, so I got my undergrad in psychology at UCF. Mm-hmm. And so right now I am still at UCF getting my master's in mental health counseling. And I was supposed to be finishing up in December, but everything happened. And so it got pushed back to May, but that's all right. And, you know, I'm excited for where God wants to take me with that degree specifically.
What do you see yourself doing down the road?
Well, I would say that, you know, after I graduate in May, you know, I would love to continue to be in the church and continue to use my talents to serve God, but also incorporate my skills that I learned in the counseling field and incorporate that too. You know, I want to continue to be in ministry and finding a way to include worship and counseling with that together.
That's wonderful. It's a great goal to have, and to use a degree that you've got, not just one degree, but two degrees, a master's and your undergrad as well. That's really fantastic to have that, and that's going to be a door opener for you wherever you go. We talked about how that you did all of this in the context of COVID, and COVID seems to be, once again, I don't know, I heard something, and it's, I can't believe we're back doing this and talking about this again, but my wife is visiting her folks up in Kentucky and said, Mike, there's a run on toilet paper again.
Oh,
and
no.
So I went last night to Costco.
Yeah.
Not a single package in all of Costco.
Oh, my goodness.
It's back again. And And I don't know exactly what they're going to attribute the run this time on painter goods. But yeah, folks, I'm sorry if you're hearing this for the first time. Yeah, we're back at that point again where it seems that hoarding is the is the choice of most.
Yeah.
And it's sad. But this whole thing of COVID is, it's just like the nightmare that keeps rolling over and over and over. And so with that, with your age, I know that it affects everyone, but what are you finding your friends, people that would be in your kind of age group, what are their thoughts about it? What are their maybe anticipations about what's going to happen in the future?
Yeah, I would say at least from the school side of it, a lot of us were kind of, we're very disappointed with, you know, not having to the ability to graduate. You know, I know a lot of us were looking forward to actually walking and being with our families. And I know some people from my classes were having to go with the virtual graduations and just watching their name on a screen instead of having that ability to walk. And I know slowly we're starting to kind of, you know, do different forms of graduations. Like, you know, at least in UCF side, they're having like a stage somewhere in their student union area and letting them walk and at least being with some family members.
Four members of the family can go.
Yeah. And, at least for me, I'm going to graduate in May. And so I'm hoping and praying that we'll be able to at least do some form of a normal graduation. And I know there were some talks about that, at least with my program director was mentioning to us that there was a possibility of doing that, whether families are distant with one another, but I don't know how they would do that with such a huge graduating, you know, number of students that they normally have.
Right. And, you know, you think about these packed stadiums where, when I know when my kids graduated from UF, we were there and there would be us and 10,000 other people, you know, in that building or more. And it's a different time. And along with that, you know, comes this fatigue. I had Jeff McLaughlin on the line yesterday. He was on my show and he used the term and coined it COVID fatigue. And I think that was really an interesting way of saying it. I think there is a fatigue that's happening, and it's happening across the board. It's not just one age group that's feeling this, but it's really had an impact, and not a nice one either, upon our life.
Yeah, and even, you know, all of our classes for the past, you know, three semesters have been done virtually.
Yeah,
and the professors are having to kind of on the fly kind of shift the way that they do assignments and they do, you know, the way that they teach. And it was, you know, it's very frustrating on all of us, but, you know, we have to push through and have to get through it.
Well, here's the big question. Do you feel that a lot of your friends, are they cautiously optimistic or are they disappointedly pessimistic about the future?
I would say a mix of both. You know, there are some that are, you know, disappointed, you know, they're not going to be able to walk or to graduate, but then there are those that are just looking forward to getting a job and actually, you know, going in the field and hopefully eventually over time getting to see clients in person and not just see them over the phone or through Zoom.
Well, it is something that I know that no one knows that. No one knows what our next year. We're all hoping that 2021 will be a little bit different than 2020 has been.
Yeah.
But now the first question is going to be, I got to go to a place and find paper towels and toilet paper, for crying out loud.
So. Got to go back to eBay and Amazon probably to find those things.
Oh, my goodness. I just can't believe this is happening again, but it appears to be. Christian Pizarro has been my guest today, and it's so delightful having you here, and we wish you the best. And again, you're serving at Palm Springs Drive Baptist Church. And do you know offhand what the website is for that?
Yeah, so it's psdbc.net. So it's or you can search up Palm Springs Drive Baptist Church on Google.
Palm Springs Drive Baptist Church, and go find Christian and say hello to this young man that's been a delightful guest on my show today. So I really want to say thank you, and may God bless you as you continue to do the work of the Lord and find that path. And also, congratulations to you. When are you getting married?
Yeah, I'm getting married on September 3rd.
My anniversary is the 4th, Cindy.
Oh, wow.
Labor Day weekend wedding.
Yeah.
That's something. Well, congratulations. And we wish you the very best and hope that all of that goes off just wonderfully. And my goodness, what an exciting year that next year is going to be for you as well.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. Thank you so much again for allowing me to be here.
Christian Pizarro, my guest on Afternoons with Mike. And friends, we'll catch you next time right here on The Shepherd.